The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Station.
If we look to the answer as to why for so many years we achieved so much, prospered as no other people on earth, it was because here in this land we unleashed the energy and individual genius of man to a greater extent than has ever been done before. Those who say that we're in a time when there are no heroes, they just don't know where to look. The sloping hills of Arlington National Cemetery, with its row upon row of simple white markers bearing crosses or stars of David, they add up to only a tiny fraction of the price that has been paid for our freedom. As for the enemies of freedom, those who are potential adversaries, they will be reminded that peace is the highest aspiration of the American people. We will negotiate for it, sacrifice for it. We will not surrender for it now or ever. We are Americans.
Welcome to Always Right Radio with Bob France on AM 1420, The Answer.
Well, good morning. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. Normally, I begin the program by telling you what time it is. I tell you what the date is and the day is, and I get you kind of set for the day. I don't know if I can do that this morning. Quite frankly, I don't know if we know what decade it is, much less what day it is or year it is. Is it the late 1930s and I missed it? Are we in Nazi freaking Germany and I missed it? Somehow, some way, that's kind of what I feel like it must have felt like for them at that time. Jews are being assaulted. They are being blocked. They are being attacked. They're being pushed. They're being shoved. They're being intimidated. On American college campuses. Not by the SS, not by the Gestapo, but by American students. Your kids. Not you personally listening right now, but the kids, the children of America, the young people that we raised who are now 18, 19, 20, 21, and they're on college campuses, and they are targeting Jews. Dare I say, for extermination. That doesn't mean they're building ovens. Doesn't mean that they're engaging in an actual Holocaust, but exterminating them by removing them from their campuses, from their cities, from their communities, from their lives. It's actually happening right now. And it isn't happening in the ghettos. It's happening on the lawns of the most elite universities in the world. It's happening on the campus lawns at Yale in Connecticut, at Columbia in New York, at MIT in Boston. It's happening at all of the most elite places, the most educated among us, screaming for an end to Jewry. Oh, they might not say the word Jewry, and they might not say the word Jew. They may substitute the word Israel for it, but then they are attacking people who are not in Israel. They're attacking Jews who are here in the United States, the place where the First Amendment guarantees us freedom of religion, freedom of religion, including Judaism, believe it or not, and also the freedom and the protection to not be abused because of race. They're casting all of that asunder in order to target Jews as they continue to scream for an end to the existence of Israel. And yes, the Jewish people, whose homeland that is. I apologize for starting the show on such a negative tone this morning, but how can you not? Did you turn on your TV this morning? Did you turn on Hugh Hewitt? Did you listen, see, or watch, look online anywhere? The massive protests, thousands strong, at Yale, at Columbia, where they've been doing this for 5 days. They're not even being veiled about it anymore. This is what they want. An end to Israel and an end to Jews. What decade are we in? We're going to cover this in some depth at the top 9 of 9, which is going to start here in just a moment. Additionally, of course, we have our own problems as Americans, as we have been sold out. We have been sold out by the Republican Party. And I can say this with some authority and with some conviction this morning. After what Mike Johnson, the Democrat Speaker of the House of Representatives, you heard me. You heard me. I didn't stutter, and I said what I said. Mike Johnson is no better than Jason Stevens, the Speaker of the Ohio House of Representatives, because he gave Democrats power that they otherwise would not have. And you and I, as conservative Americans, are now officially homeless. We have no home. We have no party to call our own. We have no place of, safe space, if you will, saying, well, this is where we get together and this is where we organize. There's no one to organize with. There's no one to plan with. The Republican Party, the Democrat Party, the Uniparty, all the same. Borrowing $95 billion more from the Chinese to send it to corrupt governments like Volodymyr Zelensky's to carry on a war with no end, no goals, no chance of victory, no end in sight. Borrowing a nation that's $34.5 trillion in debt just borrowed another $95 billion, not for the good of the American people, but to send to foreign countries. And Mike Johnson engineered it all. Trans-Democrat. Yeah, he may call himself a Republican, but he is clearly in the process of transitioning. We are homeless if you are a conservative American. We have nowhere to go. I would tell Jim Jordan that this morning, but he's traveling. Wink, wink. I don't know what that means. All I know is we're supposed to have Jim Jordan today, and I got the note last night. Blame American Airlines. Okay, I'll blame American Airlines. But all I know, Max Miller voted to sell out the American people, as did dozens and dozens of Republicans, all under the direction of Mike Johnson, who took the gavel, saying no more wars and no more money for a war that can't be won. No more money for a foreign country whose entanglements do not directly impact the United States of America. He's on the job for less than 6 months, and boom, here he is. Anybody miss Kevin McCarthy yet? I do. He wasn't any better than Johnson, but he at least fought before he had to capitulate because he didn't have the numbers. He at least fought. Mike Johnson's fighting too, but just for the other side, for the Democrat side. Our country is in great peril. And that's the only way I can put it. That doesn't mean I'm giving up. It doesn't mean we're not going to fight. But you better recognize the fight before us. All right. Let's do this before it's banned. Before we're allowed to even pledge allegiance to the United States of America anymore. And I don't think that's being said in haste. I'm telling you, America last on the minds of the Democrats. America is last in the minds of too many Republicans. America does not come first. If I were sitting in front of Mike Johnson right now, if I was standing here next to any of the trans Democrat Republicans who are transitioning, I would tell them, don't stand proudly and say this pledge with us. Instead, take a knee like the Marxist dog that you are. All of you. For those who do still care about the nation, however, join us.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
It's 9 o'clock. Do you know where your headlines are? We do. It's time for the Top 9 at 9 on Always Right Radio.
Started the show a little bit differently this morning only because of the extraordinary circumstances, but we still have to do this.
Number 1.
The House voted yesterday or Saturday to sell out the American people. $95 billion in foreign aid to Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. A separate vote taken on each proposal. $60 billion of that goes to Ukraine. Mike Johnson, the Democrat speaker, faced pushback from some Republicans in the House who wanted him to hold votes on foreign aid spending. Hold off on those votes, rather. Until more funding for our own border could be secured. After the votes, Johnson said that global threats from Russia, Iran, and China necessitated American leadership and support for the spending. Kiss my royal red American ass, Mike Johnson. If you're worried about Russians, Iranians, and Chinese, then put our freaking efforts and our money into our own border because they're here. We don't need to go to Ukraine to fight Russians and Iranians and Chinese. They're here.
Number 2.
After the U.S. House of Representatives passed that $60 billion aid package to Ukraine on Saturday, Democrats waved Ukrainian flags on the House floor in our Capitol, underscoring their anti-America first agenda. 210 Democrats voted for that thing. None of them voted against it. Even as our own borders are being overrun, as I just described, Congressman Corey Mills, a Republican from Florida, was livid, and rightfully so, said no flag except the American flag should ever be flown or brought into the U.S. Capitol, into the U.S. Congress chamber. I wish those who waved flags of Ukraine on the chamber floor loved America and our open borders as much as they do foreign nations. It's a sad day in the Congress when many of those who cheer for Ukraine funding vehemently opposed support to the U.S. border security. Representative Clay Higgins from Louisiana said all Democrats waving Ukrainian flags on your House floor when the bill passed, sending another $60 billion of your treasure to fund the war machine, 100% deficit money, borrowed on the backs of your children. Wake up, America.
Number 3.
Among the most infuriating statements made during Saturday's sellout of the American people was this one. From Democratic Representative Gerald Conley from Virginia, who essentially said, yeah, America last.
Some say, well, we have to deal with our border first. The Ukrainian-Russian border is our border. It's the border between depraved autocracy and freedom-loving people seeking our democratic way of life.
Did you know that? Did you know that we lived in Ukraine now? The Ukrainian border is our border, say Democrats, and obviously some Republicans.
Number 4.
Police began removing some of the anti-Israeli protesters from the encampment on Yale's campus early this morning after a week of protests calling for the university to divest from military weapon manufacturers. At least 16 of the idiots were arrested as police looked through tents and set up in the encampment where more than 250 agitators and terrorist supporters gathered on Sunday night. Protest organizers told the paper that at least some of those arrested are students. The removal of those protesters comes after a similar situation involving anti-Israel protesters, also known as terrorist sympathizers, on Columbia's campus in New York. At least 108 of the sympathizers were arrested as police broke up the encampment. Students there were told an overnight statement that all classes are being held virtually today. as anti-Israel protesters take over the campus with another encampment. Did you hear that? They're paying $100,000 a student to go to Columbia, an Ivy League university, and take classes at home in front of their computers. Why? Because they can't guarantee student safety if those students are Jewish.
Number five.
Pro-Palestinian protesters outside Columbia late Saturday night openly advocated for Hamas terrorism, yelling, "Burn Tel Aviv to the ground," as well as other pro-violence slogans. Heated protests have roiled Columbia's campus in the last week. New York, I mentioned 108 arrests. Dozens of protester tents occupied campus for over 24 hours, while the university deemed a safety concern and a violation of university policies in trying to disassemble some of it. "We say justice, you say how, burn Tel Aviv to the ground," protesters shouted Saturday night, according to footage posted by the Israel War Room online. "Al-Qassam, you make us proud, take another soldier out," was another chant that they used. Al-Qassam, by the way, is Hamas's military wing, the ones that carried out the brutal attacks against Israel on October 7th. "Hamas, we love you, we support your rockets too," was another fan favorite. "Red, black, green, and white, we support Hamas fight," was another. "It is right to rebel, Al-Qassam, give them hell," they said. It got so bad that the Orthodox rabbi at Columbia Barnard urged the 290-plus Jewish students to flee the campus. Literally, leave, get out, go home, protect yourself and your life, because your safety as a Jew on campus at Columbia cannot be guaranteed. Prompting me to ask once again, what decade is this? One Jewish professor at Columbia has had enough.
"Last night, what you saw at Columbia University is open support for Hamas, holding signs saying, 'Al-Qassam Brigade, your next target,' pointing at Jewish students. So here you have it. While U.S. citizens are being held hostage in Gaza by Hamas and by the Islamic Jihad, you have students at Columbia University and faculty at Columbia University who are cheering on Hamas."
He is 100% correct and justified in his outrage.
Number six.
You want more outrage? We got it for you on tap. Former Secretary of State and failed presidential candidate Hillary Clinton claims that Donald Trump wants to kill and imprison his opposition. She said this in an interview rant where she begged voters to ignore an old Joe Biden and understand that he's compassionate and effective. And moreover, he's not Donald Trump. She was appearing on the Defending Democracy podcast with Mark Elias, where in a staggering case of projection, she declared Trump wants to kill and imprison his political opponents.
"And finally, I think we haven't talked much about the international arena, but, you know, his bromance with Putin, and it was actually called that, I think, by the former prime minister of Australia, who said he saw Trump with Putin, and Trump was like, you know, just gaga over Putin, because Putin does what he would like to do, kill his opposition, imprison his opposition, drive, you know, journalists and others into exile."
I just want you to think about the three things she just said. The list or the pile of bodies has got to be reaching, I don't know, at least two, three stories now of Clinton crime family victims. All of them either political opponents or opponents who just got in the way of their political ambitions. The list of bodies of the Clinton crime family has been discussed and has been rumored and has been reported on for years. And she's claiming Trump wants to kill people? Two, Trump wants to imprison his opponents. Do you know what happens this morning? President Trump begins the first of four bogus trials being spearheaded by the Democrats and, yes, the Clintons, the Obamas, and the Bidens, because he is a threat to their power. He is their political opponent. They are trying to literally imprison him. And what was the third one? Silencing journalists, the Clinton family, the Biden family, the DNC, the Obamas. They have made it their mission to suppress and silence and censor all media and all voices that are not helping advance their agenda. They are literally doing, in a, like I said, a staggering case of projection, everything that they say Trump wants to do. And oh, by the way, one little reminder. Why are you guessing and trying to predict what Trump would do if he becomes president? He's already been president for 4 years. Guess what? Didn't kill anybody, didn't imprison any opponents, didn't imprison or silence any journalists. All he did was work for the American people. But this is what we're dealing with, friends.
Number seven.
Joe Biden's effort to get on the general election ballot in this state remains in limbo. Biden, as you know, he is going to miss the August 7th deadline to be able to be on the Ohio ballot, because, which is 90 days before the election, because they decided to schedule their convention for August 19th. They're idiots. That's their fault. Follow-up correspondence from, let's see, I've got to get the names correct here. My apologies. Donald McTeague is the attorney representing the Democrats who want to be on the ballot, and they are suggesting that the best way to do it would be kind of a virtual certification, kind of a provisional certification, be accepted by the state before the August 7th deadline, and then an official confirmation would be by August 25th, 3 days after the convention. But the response from McTeague, from Secretary of State Frank LaRose, is no bueno. There are no provisions in Ohio law, said LaRose, that would allow by him to provide the Democrat Party with an alternative process, and said that he had consulted the matter with Ohio Attorney General Dave Yost, who affirmed. So, sorry, move your convention, punks.
Number eight.
The Biden administration's Department of Education unveiled a sweeping set of rules on Friday, erasing protections for women and girls in sex-based spaces by expanding Title IX to include gender identity, a term that has never been mentioned once in the original law. A majority of males agree that a majority of Americans agree that males who claim to identify otherwise should never be allowed to infiltrate girls and women's sports teams and private spaces. As of now, some 25 states have laws or regulations aimed at keeping boys and men out of female-only spaces on and off the field. Biden is trying to circumvent the right of those states with this change to Title IX. More on that later.
Number nine.
And finally, if Biden is reelected, get ready to fork over an a level of taxation that is unable to be comprehended. All right, there's the word, incomprehensible amount of money. Biden has vowed to keep former President Trump's 2017 CAC tax cuts expired for another 4 years, meaning middle class and low income Americans will see higher taxes beginning next year in 2025. There is no exaggeration here, Biden said. It's going to expire, and if I'm reelected, it's going to stay expired. That is going to lead to the largest tax hike ever. As part of Biden's fiscal year 2025 $7.3 trillion budget plan, Americans will see a $4.9 trillion tax hike. $4.9 trillion tax hike. And yes, just as a rising tide lifts all boats, a $4.9 trillion tax hike will sink all boats, no matter how, whether it's a wealthy, an elitist person's yacht or your rowboat. They're all going down. And that's it.
This has been the Top 9 at 9 on Always Right Radio. AM 1420, The Answer.
We'll be back.
The Answer.
Okay, it's 9:36. Good Monday morning to you, for what it's worth. 22nd morning of the fourth month in a year, in a decade that I do not recognize. If you would like to shed a little bit of light on that for me, I would be more than happy to hear it. 216-901-0945, 888-281-1110. We do have a couple of people we're going to talk to this morning about other issues coming up at 10:10. There continues to be, you know, an attack of trans democracy. Is that how I would say that? Trans democratism in the Ohio General Assembly as well with respect to medical freedom. We're going to talk to Stephanie Stock, the founder of Ohioans for Medical Freedom. She's doing a phenomenal job in shining a spotlight on what is being done. Don't think for one second, by the way, that we are not going to get hit with more mandates. Do not think for one second we are not going to get another round of some sort of an epidemic or pandemic or whatever, and we are not going to be able to choose what is done to us. And there are some Republican quote-unquote leaders in the Ohio Capitol right now in the GA that are doing everything they can to make sure we cannot make our own choices. Let's phrase it that way. So we're going to talk to her coming up at 10:10. At 11:10, Alex Newman is going to join us, and we're going to talk about education. He's got the solution for education issues in this country, and it starts with parents taking over. Parents, it is up to you to take over, quite literally, from what the government is trying to do to your kids in your schools. So we're going to talk about those two things a little bit later on. For now, we're going to open the phone lines at 216-901-0945, 888-281-1110. Imagine if you can, could you have imagined, let's phrase it another way, could you ever have imagined a time in a post-Holocaust America, not just world, but a post-Holocaust America, after everything that we watched and that we fought to stop, and that Americans shed their blood and their treasure, sacrificed their treasure to stop by going over and defeating Hitler and saving what was left. About two-thirds of European Jews were wiped out. That after being part of that horrific, horrific moment in time, that moment in world history, the United States, which is one of the leading actors, the leading actor, along with their allies, in stopping that in just 80 years, 80 short years, which is the blink of an eye. I mean, it's a lifetime for you and me. If we live to be 80, we're lucky. But in the blink of an eye, in terms of the bigger picture, we would be in a place where Jews are being run off of campuses because they're Jews. Did you think that after saving and stopping the Holocaust and saving the lives of countless numbers of Jews in that horrific, horrific time, that 80 years later we would be taking the descendants of those Jews, those who were captured, thrown in concentration camps or death camps and systematically executed, that their descendants would be going to college in places like the United States of America, in the most elite colleges that we have. The highest achieving, the highest, the most expensive, that they would be coming to the United States and going to these schools and then being chased off of the campuses because they're Jews. Because that's happening. That's literally happening. As I mentioned in the top 9 and 9, the rabbi who works there at Columbia University and Barnard University literally issued a statement, quote, "The events of the last few days, especially last night, have made it clear that Columbia University's public safety and the New York Police Department cannot guarantee Jewish students' safety. It is not our job as Jews to ensure our own safety on this campus. We must leave this campus." They have to leave the campus in order to save their lives, because too many of them are being attacked. Too many of them are being intimidated and harassed. It's going on at Yale as well. One of them got stabbed in the eye with one of the flagpoles of the Palestinian flag wavers. And they're not making any bones about it. It's not just, hey, we want to stop the genocide in Gaza. It's not a genocide. A genocide is what was done to the Jews in the aforementioned Holocaust. But it's not as if they're just saying, hey, we're worried about the collateral damage and the civilian victims in Gaza. No, 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 no. That's not what they're chanting anymore. Now it's, we are Hamas. Burn Tel Aviv to the ground. Burn Tel Aviv to the ground. Hamas, we love you. We support your rockets, too. You know, the rockets that are fired into Israel to kill Jews. Red, black, green, and white, we support Hamas' fight. It's right to rebel. Akasam, give them hell. I mean, how much more do you need to hear? Hopefully no more. this isn't about just, I'm worried about the innocent people in Gaza who might be collateral damage as the cowards in Hamas hide amongst the civilian population. No, 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 no. Now it's kill the Jews. We are with Hamas. Hamas has a charter that says we will kill all Jews where we find them. We will end Israel from the river to the sea. And now American college students are screaming, yeah, us too. We will kill Jews where we find them. We are Hamas. Did you ever think that would happen? Mind-blowing stuff, really. Let's go to the phones. 216-901-0945. Father John calling us from Parma on AM 1420, The Answer. Father John, good morning.
Good morning. I don't know where to begin. I just don't know where to begin.
I feel the same way as I was preparing this show today. I didn't know where to start or where to go.
Okay. I have hereditary high blood pressure. I have to take three times that amount of medication. I hope you don't have to. I'm Pastor Emeritus, St. Vladimir's Ukrainian Orthodox Church in Parma, 37 years. I come from Taylor, Pennsylvania, coal mining, educated in Canada. My family came over from Ukraine 122 years. We were outstanding patriots, like everyone else, of the United States. I lived on Lincoln Street. The street over was Jefferson. The street over is Washington. The street over was Harrison. Kids, we would go up and down the streets, seeing which street had the most American flags flying on the holidays. My grandmother had three sons. All three sons were in Europe during the Second World War. My father was a staff sergeant in Iceland building runways for the Allied forces. I really pray that you would understand what you're saying when you talk about Ukraine.
I do, Father, I do.
I'm as I mentioned to your caller, the screener, Parma has eight Ukrainian churches. In Parma alone, eight. Mm-hmm. Two of the beautiful churches were the domes.
Yep, they're beautiful.
Do you know those
churches? Drove by them on Saturday. Drove by them on Saturday on my way out to a state road. And I believe me, when I drove by it, I know who they are and I know what they are. And I said a prayer. A sign of the cross is what I did, actually. Believe me, I know.
Thousands attended church in those churches yesterday. Thousands are praying for Ukraine. But I don't think you or some of your listeners are aware. Those churches were all destroyed. They are now presently destroyed in the areas where Russia occupies Ukraine. Mm-hmm. If Ukraine fails and falls, all of the political leaders will be either assassinated, you know very well.
The political leaders are responsible for what is happening to those churches. The political leaders are responsible. Ukraine is a very, very corrupt place, not because of the people and certainly not having anything to do with those churches. But the leadership of Ukraine is absolutely corrupt. You know this, I'm sure. That the corruption with the Zelensky government and the fact that they don't even have free elections, those people that go into those churches and pray, they can't choose new leadership if they want. They don't have free and fair elections in Ukraine. Ukraine is a very, very bad place right now because of the leadership, and it's a sad reality for the people and a sad reality for any Ukrainian people in Parma or anywhere else in the United States that have family there. But the sad reality is this invasion by Putin, horrific, absolutely, unjustifiable, absolutely. Should it be fought and repelled? Absolutely. And it has been, but it is the sending of tens of hundreds of billions of dollars that we do not even have. We are borrowing from China, which is going to harm our own children here in the United States for generations to come, to send money to Zelensky that is not being used for proper purposes. It is a corrupt leadership, Father, and I'm sorry to be direct with you about this, but I'm just telling you, we cannot continue to throw good money to a bad government that, by the way, has no end in sight. There is no victory that is in in even in the distant horizon,
as I understand it,
in Ukraine. So, Father, I mean, you have to understand where we are coming from. We sympathize with and pray for Ukrainian people.
But we also understand
the reality of the government. Go ahead, Father.
My only question is,
mm-hmm.
why don't you have these discussions with Hugh Hewitt, with Dennis Prager, with Tom Kahn, and other outstanding leaders in Washington, Republican leaders? They don't believe what you're saying. Zelensky is the... Can you believe the only two countries that I know of in the world have Jewish presidents? Zelensky's Jewish. He won by 70% of the vote. He was a comedian.
That's because they don't have free elections there. These are not elections you can trust. Not even a chance. No.
You're saying these words, and
I've had these discussions with Hugh Hewitt, by the way, and I've had discussions with Dennis Prager, and we respectfully disagree on this, as I am respectfully disagreeing with you now. But do you understand, Father? If I were in charge of this country and I committed $200 billion of our dollars we are sending a message to China and saying, hey, will you send $200 billion over to Ukraine for us and put it on our tab? We'll owe you. We don't even have the money. So if I'm sending $200 billion of our dollars from by way of China to Ukraine, do I not have a right, Father, to say how will it be spent and what will its end goal be? Because right now, what our leadership is telling us from Capitol Hill and from Kyiv as well, is that there is no path to victory that can be identified. That's why they are saying the literal words. I'm quoting them when they say, however long it takes, no matter what it takes. And then they never finish the sentence. However long it takes to do what? What is victory? And then when you say, no matter how much, that $200 billion, does it become $400 billion? Does it become $600 billion? Does it become a trillion? At what point, Father, do we say that that money is being well spent and worth the pain that it's going to cause the American people and the American economy, which our children matter too? At what point
I want that
sentence to be finished, no matter how long and no matter how much, for what? What's the rest of the sentence?
Nobody questions that. But the reality is, China wants Taiwan. Tonight I'm going to a Seder, my 20th Seder. I have dear Jewish friends.
Mm-hmm.
I wave the Israeli flag in front of the Jewish community center in Beechwood. I know these rabbis personally. Our Ukrainian choir sang in the temple, probably the first time in the world that a Ukrainian Orthodox choir sings at the Shabbat service at Temple Israel in Beechwood. But do we stand up for anything that's wrong? Do you know this,
Father? This is not a religious fight in Ukraine. You're bringing up Christianity and support for Israel. I am a Christian and a Catholic, and I support Israel too, and I support Judaism,
and I'm with you. But
Putin did not invade Ukraine over anti-Semitism the way Hamas attacked Israel.
This is not a religious fight. Invaded Ukraine because he does not believe Ukrainians have a right to exist. That we do not exist as a people, just like the Jewish people do not have a right to exist. Ukraine struggled and struggled. Is it perfect? No, it's not perfect. But are we Americans?
It's one of the most corrupt governments in the world.
How could you say that?
Because
really?
I'm watching it, and because I'm reading it, because I know the people who are on the ground there, and I read their reports, and I know exactly what's coming out of Ukraine.
Do you know Russia has lobbyists in Washington spewing these lies?
Well, I'm not getting information from Russian lobbyists in Washington.
I listened to the debates with Rivek. He said the Parliament of Ukraine wants to destroy the Ukrainian Orthodox Church. There are two Ukrainian Orthodox churches in Ukraine. The largest is independent, but then there's another one that some of their bishops are under house arrest because they work for Moscow.
Well, Father, I'm not going to debate every element of the Ukrainian government or faith in the churches in Ukraine, but I will say this to you, and this is very, very important, okay? The United States is not innocent in all of this. The current administration has ties to Ukraine and Zelensky that go beyond anything as far as supporting them against Russian aggression. The fact that the former vice president of the United States, who is the current president of the United States, traveled to Ukraine to specifically get fired and have removed a prosecutor who was investigating corruption between the government and their largest natural gas company, the Burisma company. All because that Burisma company had the son of that vice president, Joe Biden, on its board, making millions and millions of dollars for the Biden family. And this prosecutor was exposing the corruption and was going after them. He got fired so they would leave Burisma alone. The corruption, and now here we are providing that country and that government that did that with untold hundreds of billions of American dollars, all that we don't even have. The reality is, it is a corrupt country, or not a corrupt country, it is a corrupt government. The United States' corrupt government is enabling it, and the fact that there is no end in sight and no victory that is attainable means we are absolutely, if there is to be fighting that continues, and if there is to be fighting that continues, and if it is, then, you know, God be with them. But that is going to have to come, the support is going to have to come from some of the other Eastern European neighbors there who are much, much more directly impacted by this than we are.
What do you think other governments are looking at the situation in the United States? Do you not think that they're thinking we are corrupt, and aren't we?
Well, I just told you that under the current administration, yes, we are corrupt.
But
yes.
It's not only the administration.
Not as a country, but under the current leadership, yes.
If Speaker Johnson, who's a devout Christian, I believe he's a Baptist, he received clergy from Ukraine begging for help. They just sent a two-page letter that Protestant clergy, even though the country's majority Orthodox, Protestant clergy asked him, do you not think that this individual, you say, sold us out? What about his heart? What about his true feelings as a Christ-loving Baptist that he believes in this cause?
That is not his purview. This is not a religious struggle, Father. I'm sorry, and I'm sorry to raise my voice, but no. He cannot sell out American children. I mean, look, he just gave all of that money away. Hold on. No, Father, you wait for a second, please. Listen, do we have sympathy and compassion for the Ukrainian people? Absolutely. But American people are dying in record numbers because of what is happening at our own southern border. How can the Speaker of the House of Representatives, acting in the United States government, not look out for the people of this country first by making sure that our own border is secured? And then we have Democrats on the Hill yesterday saying the Ukrainian border is our border. No, it's not. Americans do not live there, and I'm not going to allow my child in this is the best example I can give you. I'm not going to allow my child to starve while I take bread to the neighbor's child next door. I'm going to feed my child first. Then I'll do everything I can to help the neighbor's child. But my child is going to get fed first, and I don't believe that that is sinful. I do not believe there is anything wrong with that.
I married a Canadian girl. The government of the United States did not permit me to bring my wife over to this United States because I didn't have a job. My parents had to sign a document that they would be responsible for her for $10,000. This was in 1972. That's probably $100,000. I'm sick when I look at those people coming across the border. Nobody questions that. Nobody. Nobody.
Well, then you would agree with me that we should solve that problem first with American dollars before we solve other problems.
We can solve that problem. We should solve that problem.
Yes,
we
should.
I'm retired now. For the first time in my life, I bought a home and I had a Trump sign in front of the yard.
God bless you for that.
But I'll tell you, unless you personally can understand that compromise has to exist in government, because I don't think we thought, and I could speak now because I'm retired, we thought that the Republicans would take over the House and the Senate at the last election.
Mm-hmm.
They did not. And I think, and with respect, I think some of your rhetoric will end up the same in November, because we just can't go yelling and yelling. There has to be compromise. The border,
Father, you're speaking of something that we did not get. We did not get compromise in any way, shape, or form in this deal. Did we protect the border a little bit while also protecting a little bit of Ukraine? No, it was 100% America last. That's not compromise. That is submission. We submitted, and that is unacceptable. From where I come, Father John, God bless you. Thank you for your 37 years in service to the church and your continued service to the people. God bless you. I thank you.
Thank you very much
for your phone call. All right, 9:57. It's not a religious war in Europe. It is not a religious war in Ukraine. It is a religious war in Israel. It is not one in Ukraine. There is a big, big difference about where we send between where we send our dollars. And again, we don't have those dollars. We are $200 billion in, and there is no closer. We are no closer to a resolution and an ending of that battle than we were before. This is the military-industrial complex on steroids, and I do not support it. We'll be back. A fair price.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We'll preserve for our children this, the last best hope of man on earth, or we'll sentence them to take the last step into 1,000 years of darkness.
This is Always Right Radio on AM 1420, The Answer. With your host, Bob France.
All right, 9 minutes after 10 o'clock, hour number two is underway on this Monday. It's the 22nd morning of the fourth month of the year of our Lord, 2024. We'll see if it actually plays out that way. So real super quick, just to follow up on the conversation that I just had, which was unplanned. Like I said, he just called in. Look, I'm well aware, by the way, of the number of Ukrainian families there are in Northeast Ohio, particularly in Parma, and all of the Ukrainian churches. And as I said, I drove by the Golden Domes Saturday on my way to a discount drug mart on State Road in Parma for a grand opening event there, which, by the way, was wonderful, and they did such a great job. But I made the sign of the cross for the people of Ukraine and for the families in those churches who have family in Ukraine. Because we are compassionate and we care and we absolutely support them. There has to be, however, a limit to that support, because our own survival is also in the offing here. And when I say that, I mean literally survival, as in people dying here in the United States as well. We don't have the money to secure our own border. We don't have the policies to secure our own border. And our own families are suffering. Our own children are dying. 100,000 people are dying, for crying out loud, every few months from fentanyl, for crying out loud. And we're sending money to another country so they can deal with their own problems. And there comes a point where we have to say, yes, we're compassionate. Yes, we care. Yes, we sympathize. Yes, we empathize. But we have to take care of our own house first. We don't have $200 billion to spend. We are $34.5 trillion in debt. That number grows by another trillion every 100 days. Every 100 days, we're borrowing money from our sworn enemy, but from a geopolitical adversary called China that is looking to take us down, that is a part of that massive invasion across our own southern border. We're borrowing money from them to send it to Ukraine, to a country that, yes, it does have a massive corruption problem. And I'm sorry if Father doesn't want to accept that, but it's the reality of it. There was a survey just 6 months ago of Ukrainian adults, and the numbers are pretty staggering. Seriously, Ukrainian adults, some 78% of them say that the country has a corrupt government and the leader of the corrupt government is Zelensky, that he's responsible for that corruption. It's no small sample size. They didn't just ask 20 people. 2011 interviews with people from 135 different settlements in Ukraine were asked, and 78% of them said Zelensky is responsible for government corruption. We're sending hundreds of billions of our dollars to a man who, by the way, does not allow for free elections. And again, Father said that's not true. It is true. How do we know? Because Zelensky said it in June. The country would have no elections until its war with Russia ends. What does that mean? It means it is the beneficiary of the ongoing war. If there was a peace talk, if there was some sort of an agreement to stop the fighting and the war is over and martial law is no longer declared in Ukraine, Zelensky would have to then face re-election from a population of people that say 78% of them say he's responsible for the government corruption. It is in his personal best interest to keep this going. And nobody wants to talk about that. And I'm sorry if that makes people upset. And I'm sorry to Father, you know, who called in. God bless him. God has blessed him, obviously. But that's the reality of it. All right. We have our own problems here in the state of Ohio, too. I want to talk a little bit about HB 73. You probably know HB 73 because we have talked about it. Stephanie Stockwell, Ohio Advocates for Medical Freedom, has been just an absolute warrior on this issue and so many others. We're talking, of course, about the David Angie Patient and Health Provider Protection Act. It has been passed out of the House for a while now, since what? I want to say last summer or somewhere, passed by the House, introduced into the Senate side, and it still sits in Senate committee, and it doesn't look like it's coming out of it anytime soon. So let's welcome Stephanie Stock to the program. Stephanie, welcome back from OAMF. How are you?
Well, I'm not real thrilled this morning, Bob, but just another day in politics, right?
Yeah, I suppose. It's not supposed to be that way, but apparently it is. And Stephanie, you're joined by Dr. Richard Bartlett, who is here with us as well. Doctor, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Bob. It's an honor to be with you, sir.
Good to talk to you as well. Thank you. So, Stephanie, let's give the backgrounder for those who aren't familiar with the Dave and Angie Patient Protection Act.
Yes, so this bill will provide for the fact that doctors can submit a prescription for any drug for any off-label use for their patient, so long as that drug is legal in the state of Ohio, is not a controlled substance, and if it is considered a REMS drug, which is one of the really highly toxic drugs that they have to monitor really closely, that they follow the current federal regulations for those drugs. This bill will require the pharmacist to fill those prescriptions unless they have a religious objection, which is already part of state law, or if there's a life-threatening contraindication. And this is for outpatient pharmacies and for in the hospital. Now, if they don't want to fill it, if they say, hey, we saw on CNN that budesonide doesn't work, we don't want to fill this year, well, then they still have to fill it. They can make a note in the chart and say, well, we're opposed to this, but we're doing it anyway, and they get complete liability protection. So it's all on the doctor and the patient if they want to go through with this treatment. But the pharmacist cannot decline to fill something that the doctor's prescribing and the patient has informed consent to. That happened in outpatient pharmacies across the state over the last 3 years during COVID, and it happened in the hospital, and people died. It's time to put a stop to that. And right now, we've already made accommodations in the Senate. Steve Huffman is the chair of the Health Committee. He gave us a letter with 17 points in it. Many of them weren't even really points that should be even made. The few things that were issues that could be addressed or could be made more clear, we did that. He looked at the bill. He has not told us what provisions of the bill we did not meet. He just said we didn't meet enough of his concerns, and he's rewriting the bill himself. So he's taking the people's legislation, which we have run through with all of these quote-unquote interested parties, which we both know, Bob, is all of the opposition, right? It's the hospital association, the pharmacy association, the medical board. There were literally like 25 lobbyists in the room with us during the, quote, interested party meeting. They all want this bill dead because it interferes with their kickbacks from the federal government for COVID and for whatever their next pandemic is, and they don't want doctors to be able to control what happens with their patients. Well, guess what? The hospitals did a real crappy job of saving lives, so it's time to return that back to the doctors and give them a chance to do it. So you can tell I'm pretty fired up this morning, Bob. I'm pretty fired up.
Well, I don't blame you, given what you're describing now with Steve Huffman. Dr. Bartlett, what kind of drugs are we talking about when we talk about off-label scripts, and why would any of these physicians need a religious exemption to not fill it, or why would they refuse to fill it in the first place?
So Ohio State has become a kill zone, and there are patients who have been treated in the hospital and out of the hospital from coast to coast, from Florida to New York to California, Washington State, with a medicine that's inexpensive, readily available, and effective at treating COVID early and late. It's called budesonide, an inhaled steroid. It's $3 a treatment if it's used if you paid the full cash price. It's so safe it's been used on 2-pound premature babies in the NICU for 30 years without batting an eye. That's as delicate a human as there is. It was validated by Oxford University in the STOIC trial, the principal trial. It's been studied by France, Iran, Australia, the NIH, Brazil. In every single study, it's effective against COVID in early disease and late disease. Oxford did the STOIC trial, and they stopped it early, saying, gosh, this medicine needs to be out there immediately. It will prevent 90% of hospitalizations, ER visits, and urgent care visits with COVID. And that came out in 2021. But still, there are pharmacists who are busy being pharmacists, but they're not studying the medical journals. They're not looking at the literature on the latest treatments, so they're unaware of this. So they refuse to fill it many times out of ignorance, and doctors as well. And so this is one example. We have had people come off the ventilator out of the ICU that were told that they were going to die. The family was asked for a hospice order, and they chose budesonide, and they came home to their families across the nation, but not in Ohio, not in Ohio. And so you got the President Trump's Right to Try Act. The federal act did not protect the people in Ohio. Ohio became the 33rd state to have a right to try state bill. That didn't protect people. That's why you need House Bill 73, which passed overwhelmingly through the House of Representatives, representing the people of Ohio, to have a right to treat a deadly disease that's still in the news called COVID with an inexpensive, safe medicine that's been out for over 30 years. This generic, nobody's going to make any money off of it. It's so cheap, but it works. And the problem is the right to try laws don't protect you. And so that's why we need House Bill 73. There's one man blocking this, Senator Steve Huffman, who had this bill passed by the House in September. He's supposed to schedule it for the Senate to discuss it, debate it, vote on it, yes or no. But he is holding it up. He's not scheduling it on purpose. And everybody's life, if there's every life that is lost now that's not treated with not offered budesonide, is blood on his hands, possibly, if you look at it clearly. Oxford proved it.
If I may jump in for a second, Doctor, what are the primary objections of those pharmacists who don't want to prescribe it? And what is the primary objection here, if you know at all, of Steve Huffman?
Well, Steve Huffman, when I looked, he's received thousands of dollars from Friends of Ohio Hospitals. Well, one of the primary objections to his campaign contributions, if you'll look online, that's my understanding, that he has thousands of reasons to stand against this bill. And one of his main pieces of evidence to try to argue against scheduling this for the senators to debate it is a letter from the Ohio Hospital Association. Does that sound like he's conflicted?
I don't know what kind of power the Ohio Hospital Association is, but yes, on its face, it does sound like there might be a conflict of interest.
Stephanie, go ahead, jump in. Yeah, he's using many reasons, but one of his big reasons, and he's still spinning this currently in his district as of this past Friday, he is saying that this expands abortions in the state of Ohio, which is absolutely absurd. For one, the bill, as I said, still contains a provision that says you can decline to fill any drug for reasons of conscience. So if you think a drug, he kept using methotrexate, okay? If there's a drug that somebody rolls through the pharmacy, which I checked with multiple pharmacists, by the way, methotrexate's not being handed out like candy at pharmacy. But let's say you roll up and you're a person of childbearing years and you roll in there with a methotrexate prescription, that pharmacist can decline to fill, knowing that there's teratogenic effects with methotrexate. They can decline to fill if that person is of childbearing years, if they really think they're going to use that for an abortion. So that's his argument. Now, that's definitely on top of the fact that you can currently order abortion pills via the mail, okay? HB 73 doesn't expand jack diddly do, and we have it, as you well know, Bob, in our Constitution now. So they're blocking 68 because of the trans right nonsense, and they can do the same thing with abortion. So he's denying a bill that will save the lives of the unborn, of the born, with a smokescreen of it harming the unborn. It's ridiculous. Proceed.
Stephanie, I can't hold back. You have in Ohio the right to kill a baby up until birth now, as of November 2023, for the mother's health. It could be for her emotional health. It can be for her emotional peace. It could be because it might upset her. There's no definition. It's now legally you can a baby can be killed up to birth now in Ohio, and so you can't expand.
They can even
on
use
that.
Financial health. I think you know I can't afford it. I can't afford
so
it. Right.
It's a moot point. And by the way, that happened on his watch as the health. He was the chairman of the health department for the Senate when this happened on his watch. The buck stops here. This guy. That's a bogus argument. By the way, we're talking about people on death's door in the hospital many times that are denied an inexpensive, safe medicine that's been validated that's now a part of Australia's treatment of COVID. It's now a part of India's government treatment of COVID, the largest and the most populous country in the world. It's a ridiculous argument, yet he'll use it. He'll play that card. Even though it's ridiculous, because you can kill a baby up to birth now. All 9 months, the baby is at risk. And what is he talking about? But he's trying to stop this. He needs to schedule this for the senators to vote, so Ohio will no longer be a kill box.
Well, it sounds like. Hold on a second. Let me remind everybody who we're talking to here. Stephanie Stock is with us from Ohio Advocates for Medical Freedom, and Dr. Richard Bartlett as well with us, explaining the dangers of what they are doing to kill HB 73 because it does deny doctors and patients the right to prescribe and get filled scripts that may save their lives. Dr. Bartlett, you called, by the way. The drug that we're talking about, you called it a silver bullet for COVID. A lot of people also pointed to the ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, which were other drugs that were considered controversial and some doctors wouldn't prescribe or some pharmacists wouldn't fill. HB 73 would pretty much, you know, allow for all of those things, right?
So budesonide is validated in every single study. There's not one study that shows it doesn't work. There were people that benefited from ivermectin. It is anti-inflammatory. It does have antiviral activity. But the budesonide literally is a game changer. And that's why it's been added to the national official strategy to treat COVID in India and in Australia. Australia has an 840-page document on the government strategy to treat COVID now. And budesonide is at the top. And so Steve Huffman in his how callous can you be that you'll let people die, lose their wife, lose their husband, lose their children in the hospital when there's an inexpensive, readily available safe medicine down the hall in the hospital pharmacy? Mm-hmm. You know, it was on his watch when he was a state representative that a two-year-old died, and we got Emily's Law in Ohio because a two-year-old was overdosed on chemo drugs that was about to go home cured of cancer, but because you had high school graduates with no further credentials mixing up medicines in hospital pharmacies.
Wow.
And the child overdosed and died, and it triggered a law to be passed. There's room for improvement in Ohio health and in Ohio hospital pharmacy care and in Ohio hospital care. And this is Exhibit A. Thousands have died and should not die, and COVID is still happening.
Oh, no doubt, and there's going to be more. There's going to be more, either epidemic or pandemic pushes. They're talking about the avian flu is already moving into cattle. It's going to be into humans soon, and they're going to be talking about new vaccine requirements and new steps to be taken and so forth. Stephanie, we're just about out of time, but I want to ask you, so Huffman is holding this up. Huffman is now saying he's going to rewrite the thing that was written by the people and then push that one out. I don't know how that will look, but who are your allies? Who is working, that you have working that can influence from the inside of the Senate, Senator Huffman?
Well, George Lang has been somebody that's been with us on medical freedom, Christina Rogner. Now, George isn't on the committee. Rogner's the only one on the committee. I believe the vice chair, Senator Johnson, he is a retired doctor. I believe he supports the bill. So it's going to be a challenge. What we're going to have to do, and I'll be putting out a call to action on this, is that all of the committee members need to be contacted and told that the people want Representative Gross's current version for the Senate that we drafted to meet the majority of those concerns. We want that adopted, and we do not want Steve Huffman's version of this bill adopted.
Yeah, because then that would have to That would have to go back to the House again anyway, because any significant changes would require that. And the House passed the current version of it overwhelmingly, right?
They did, and we've even made improvements on that. So when that rolls back over to them completely gutted, they're not going to be having that. They had 75 votes over there, and it's wrong. We send things over that the people vote. This is people's legislation. The House voted on it, and then the Senate thinks they're going to go over there and just tear it up. And this is what they do with a lot of legislation. There are a lot of very upset conservatives about things going to the Senate, and then they get gutted over there and returned as shells of what they were. And it's not okay. The people's voices need to be heard.
Medical tyranny. Medical tyranny.
It is. It absolutely is. And we need to know we can't just limit this bill to be certain drugs. As much as I love budesonide, the reason that it's written the way that it is because we don't know what's coming. Just like you said, Bob. And if a doctor wakes up one day and says, oh my gosh, I have a great idea, and he can't use it, and more people die, that's going to be on the hands of the Senate for blocking this bill. And he's scheduled it for a hearing, and we're gathering people for proponent testimony already. They're booking flights. And now they're going to be coming out for a bill that they don't even know what it is.
Yeah,
this is absurd.
That's absolutely pretty absurd. That's pretty unbelievable.
It will work for bird flu, by the way.
Oh, well, that's good to know, too. Assuming we can allow it to be filled and people can have access to it, which, of course, is the issue here.
You might have to go across the border if Steve Huffman continues to block this and not allow it to be voted on. You might have to leave Ohio to be safe.
That's unbelievable. Dr. Richard Bartlett and Stephanie Stock, Ohio Advocates for Medical Freedom, thank you both for staying on top of this. Stephanie, keep me posted, okay?
Will do.
All right, thank you. Good to hear from you. It's 10:30 almost. Let's take a time out.
The Answer.
So let's ponder this for a moment here. It's 10:37. Thanks for being with us. Thank you to Stephanie and Dr. Bartlett for coming on, too. Going back to the question about the $60 billion new dollars that we don't have. I mean, you get what I'm saying here. I want to donate money to a church, but I don't have any money. So I go to Seth and I say, Seth, give me $50 because I want to donate to the church. And Seth says, sure, the interest will start accruing immediately. 20 points a week. So, you know, at this point next week, you're going to owe me, you know, the principal and the interest, and it's going to continue to build. That's what we would be doing. That's what we are doing. That would be now that it's passed, and you know it's going to pass the Senate, and it's going to be signed by Let's Go Brandon. This money for Ukraine, this $60 billion, is not our money. We borrowed it from China, and the interest has started to accrue. How do we know? Just add it to the rest of the pile. Not that we owe $34.5 trillion to China specifically. It's to all of our debtors. But we all of this money. Did you know that national debt increases by $1 trillion every 100 days? Did you know that? 3 months from now, it'll be $35.5 trillion. 3 months after that, it'll be $36.5 trillion. How much longer can this be allowed to go? We have to make some very, very difficult decisions on where we are spending all of our money. That's number one. And number two, if we are going to say, let's just for the sake of the discussion, I'm going back to the conversation I had with a Catholic priest from a Ukrainian church in Parma who called to express some disagreement with me with respect to my point of view, which happens to be that of J.D. Vance, Senator Vance, and he knows that there are a lot of Ukrainians who live in Northeast Ohio and live in Ohio, period, but particularly in Northeast Ohio. And he knows that this isn't a strong political move for him to say, look, we can't do this, but it's the right decision. It's the right information. But the father called to express some disagreement with our position that we cannot afford to continue to send money. And if we do decide we have to send money, it better be to a place where we know what the fighting is all about and what the end will be and how close we are to it, like Israel, compared to Ukraine, where there is no end in sight. There is no strategy. There's no plan. There's no path to victory. And it's just, and we are told by the Biden administration, however much it takes for however long it takes, no cap on this. What they are saying is a bottomless, you know, well of money. Except for the fact that it's not, because we don't even have that money. We're borrowing that money to give to them. And your children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren are going to continue to have to pay this down as the generations go on. And if we are going to send that money, we better be sending it to a place that we have some faith in. Now, as I said to the father who called before, I have sympathy and compassion for the Ukrainian people. I do not have sympathy and compassion for the Ukrainian government. I've learned a lot over the course of the last year plus of watching and monitoring this thing about Ukraine. Shortly, let me tell you this. Shortly after Putin went into Ukraine, I was in a conversation with John Stover from Ohio Value Voters, who told me he could put me in touch with an actual citizen, or maybe he was a fighter on the ground in Ukraine, to talk about what was going on there. This is like right after the invasion, and about how, you know, horrific this was for the Ukrainian people. And I put this guy on the radio from I don't know if he was in Kyiv or another part of Ukraine at the time. And I talked about how, you know, the only thing they need from us is to provide X. And I can't remember if it wasn't funding or if it was fighter jets from Poland that we were going to have to participate. It was a relatively small ask. And I was adamant that absolutely we should provide that. No question we should provide that. For crying out loud, look what Putin is doing right now. And I talked to this individual, and we played it back a couple of times. It was a lengthy interview from the ground in Ukraine. And I had then and have now compassion for him and all of the other fighters there. And they have my support. Since that time, we have learned an awful lot about Ukraine, and we have learned an awful lot about this ask now and what it has become. It has become so much more than that. And there has to be an end. There has to be an end, A, to the war in sight. In other words, a path, a strategy. What does it look like? A definition? We don't even know what we're fighting, what they're fighting for over there. Does every last Russian boot have to go from the Ukrainian side of the border to the other side of the border for them to say, okay, now we're done? Is that it? Then identify that. If it is key strategic regions or provinces of Ukraine that need to be evacuated by the Russians, in order for there to be a ceasefire and an end to the hostilities, then say that. Does Crimea have to be given back to Ukraine after it was annexed during the Obama administration by the Russians? Then say that. We don't even know what the end goal is. And meantime, we're sending money as if it's free, as if we have it to send. We don't. And we're sending it to somebody that I don't believe we can trust. It's a corrupt government. We're talking about a guy, talking about Volodymyr Zelensky, who has a very personal vested interest in the war continuing and getting more money from the United States and whatever other partners that they can find to keep this up. Because the longer it keeps up, the longer he can stay in power and not have to actually have an election that would likely result in his ouster. How is that not corruption? Zelensky knows that literally in the Ukrainian charter or constitution, the Ukrainian constitution, elections are suspended as long as martial law has been declared. If martial law has been imposed, then the current government stays in charge. Well, how long is martial law imposed? As long as there's war going on. Zelensky said so in June of 2023. So what are we talking, 9 months ago? Zelensky said that there will be no elections in that country until the war with Russia ends. He is absolutely benefiting from the fact that the war is going on. Have you seen any of the reports on his lavish homes? He is personally benefiting from, A, the wealth that is being sent to him, and, B, from the power he continues to enjoy. How do we know that he has to keep the war going in order to stay in power? I gave this very briefly last hour, or maybe it was earlier this hour, but this is, again, from August of last year, so now we're talking, you know, what? We're talking seven months ago, right-ish? 8 months? 8 months ago, 9 months ago, whatever. This survey was done. And in the survey of 2,011 Ukrainians from 135 different settlements there, 78% of them said Volodymyr Zelensky is responsible for the government corruption. Nearly all surveyed Ukrainians, 89% of them in the survey, said corruption was the country's most serious problem after the war with Russia. So 89% of the people, that's an extraordinary number. You don't see that in any poll. I mean, seriously. But 89% of Ukrainians say the biggest problem they have in their country is government corruption. 78% of them say that corruption is the responsibility of Volodymyr Zelensky. And he's the guy that we're sending $60 billion new dollars to. I mean, that number is, like I said, we're up to $200 billion now that we have sent Ukraine since the start of this thing. People like Senator J.D. Vance are saying, no, enough is enough. We can't do that anymore. And then you've got war hawks like Lindsey Graham going on Fox News and saying J.D. Vance doesn't know what he's talking about. We got to keep sending all of this money there. We got to keep that war going. We got to keep that war going, prop it up, no end in sight, no strategy, no declared objectives. Just keep the war going, keep sending the money there, and don't worry about the corrupt government that is accepted.
That's just going to lead to more lost lives.
Well, if you want American military members to stay out of the fight with Russia, help Ukraine. If they go into a NATO nation, Russia, we're in a fight.
You're full of crap. Lindsey Graham is full of K-E-R-R-A-P-P, crap. He's not going into a NATO country. What the heck makes you think that, I mean, Putin is an ex-KGB. He saw the Cold War. He knew about the politics of mutual assured destruction. What makes you think he wants to have a world war with the United States? He's not going into Poland. If he goes into Poland, a NATO country, knowing that the terms of our participation in NATO require all of us to fight to defend that NATO nation if it is invaded, he knows if he goes into Poland, it is a war with the United States. What makes you think he wants a nuclear war to end the world? We fought the Cold War with the Russians once. He knows about it. He knows full well that going into a NATO nation is going to lead to a full-on war with NATO. He's not going to do that, but this is what the hawks say. People like Lindsey Graham, in order to justify the continued expenditures. It's ridiculous. It's complete fear-mongering, and it has no basis in fact whatsoever. Why would Vladimir Putin want to go into a war with the United States of America? Just a full-on military ground war. Why? And which would eventually become an air war and eventually become probably nuclear missiles flying. Why would they want to do that? What is the benefit? What Putin is selling to his people, of course, is that, look, it's NATO that wants to become it's Ukraine that wants to become a NATO country, and we're not going to have NATO on our doorstep here because then they might start firing into Moscow. That's his argument for even going into Ukraine in the first place. And I think he's full of crap, too, except for the fact that what do we have in the United States right now? We have leadership that is so completely incompetent. The right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing. One day you got Kirby saying or you'll have Jake Sullivan saying that NATO, Ukraine is not being invited into NATO. And then you got Kamala Harris going to Ukraine and inviting Ukraine into NATO. I mean, they're back and forth every other day. Their messaging is so off. You don't know what side Biden's going to take in a given day. But the point is, that's enough equivocation from the United States. Not that we're the deciding member of NATO. I mean, obviously there would have to be a vote anyway if they're going to accept a new member nation. But you're talking about Putin watching all of this playing and saying, well, if Ukraine becomes NATO, we are going to be in serious jeopardy. We're sharing our border now with a NATO country that could very easily attack us. That's not going to happen. He's a liar too. So you got you got all kinds of misinformation and disinformation and dishonesty flying out of here. You got war hawks like Lindsey Graham saying that people like J.D. Vance, who are smart enough to actually see what's going on here, are wrong for not wanting to give more money to a corrupt a president of Ukraine whose very political survival depends upon the ongoing nature of this war. J.D. is right. I'm right. There is something we can do for Ukraine, and we did it. Now our part is done. We did what we could do. They cannot just say, please give us another blank check. They can't. We can't. It's awful policy. It's awful, awful, awful policy, and it is very, very different from what's going on in Israel. All right, 216-901-0945, 888-281-1110. If you want to get into that, let's do it. Chuck is in Cleveland. Hi, Chuck. Go ahead.
Hi, Bob. Thanks for taking the call. Sure. My question is, how much of these billions are going to the Biden crime family? You know, he's sitting there with his hand out going, where's my cut? Where's my cut?
Well, we know, I don't know if it's in the billions, but it's in the millions. We know this because of what we've already learned about the Biden's family relationship with Ukraine and Ukrainian government and Ukrainian energy companies and so forth. They have been greasing the Biden since Biden was back in the vice president's office.
That's why they're green lighting all this money to go there so Biden and his crime family can get their cut.
Well, you know, that's
ridiculous.
And thank you for the call, Chuck. That is Biden's position, certainly, but that doesn't explain why Mike Johnson and why Lindsey Graham and why, you know, dozens of other Republicans are on board that, because they don't care. They don't shouldn't anyway care about Biden being enriched by this whole thing. I understand Biden's corruption in the same way that I understand Zelensky's corruption, in the same way I understand Burisma's corruption. I understand that whole marriage. And that alone makes this just completely unacceptable. I don't understand why Republicans and how Republicans who say they're concerned. What are Republicans supposed to be? Republicans are supposed to be conservative. Conservative means what? Fiscal conservatism? Social conservatism? Yes, all of those things. From the fiscal side, what's conservative about being $34.5 trillion in debt and then having your Speaker of the House just roll over without even putting up a fight? On another $1.2 trillion spending package that just greenlights all kinds of Democrat dreams, which is what Johnson did just 2 months ago. What good is it to be conservative if you're $34.5 trillion in debt and you're sending another $200 billion to, another $60 to make it $200 billion to a foreign country that we have absolutely no impact, impact from, like Ukraine? I mean, and to say that, well, Ukraine's border is our border. And if we don't fight them now by supporting Ukraine, we're going to have to fight the Russians hand to hand. No, we're not. You have absolutely no evidence of that whatsoever. It makes no sense whatsoever. And we don't have the money. And oh, by the way, even if we were right, if we were flush with cash, if we were solvent, if we weren't $34.5 trillion in debt, if we were at zero debt, it still wouldn't make sense to send the money. But when we don't even have the money, we've got to borrow from China, which continues to be much more of a threat to the United States than Russia is. They're a threat to our actual homeland. Do you realize that? You have any idea the danger that is posed by tens of thousands of military-aged male Chinese coming into this country illegally and then claiming oppression? I'm being oppressed. I'm being persecuted. I claim asylum. Okay, come on in. The number of border crossers from China since Joe Biden took office in January of 2021 has increased by 6,500%. Not 6,500 people. 6,500%. It's an invasion. It's a Chinese invasion of the United States. China is responsible for the flow of all of those thousands of pounds of fentanyl that are killing thousands and thousands of Americans. They're facilitating so much of the war. It's a war of aggression on the United States. Economically, they're here buying up our farmland by the millions of acres, and now they have I can't even count them, but it's a 6,500% increase from January 2021 to today of single military-aged Chinese males in this country. They're not coming with their families. They're not coming with children. They're not coming with grandmas and grandpas. They're here themselves. What does that tell you? They are a far bigger threat to the United States than Russia, I won't say will ever be, but than Russia is, period. Our attention should be turned to our southern border, not to Ukrainian's border with Russia. And I'm sorry to be so direct about it, and I'm sorry to be so blunt, and I'm sorry to sound callous, but you know what? There are priorities that have to matter. All right, I'm going to get a timeout here. On the other side of the top of the hour news, we're going to talk to Alex Newman. It's been a little bit since I've talked to Alex. Alex has written a terrific piece for Newsweek about the solution to the education problem. It's an American education overhaul, and it's a pro-parent overhaul that is needed. We're going to talk to him about this. I just got done telling you about what we need to do and what we can do in the state of Ohio with respect to education. If you got a young child and you're worried about the having them learn in a government-run school and you can't homeschool them yourselves, I told you about NEOCA, the Northeast Ohio Classical Academy, NEOCA. You should definitely think about that. But we're going to talk about what parents can do to prevent this education trap from continuing to ensnare our kids. We'll talk to Alex Newman about that next, and we'll take your calls too. You want to talk about Ukraine? We'll talk about Ukraine. You want to talk about Israel? We'll talk about Israel. You want to talk about Columbia, Yale, MIT, and the rest of the elite campuses chasing Jews off of campus, harassing them, surrounding them, pushing them, poking them, telling them they are not welcome? What decade is this? Is this 2024 America or 1939 Nazi Germany?
This hour of Always Right Radio is brought to you by The Floor King and KeepingMedicareSimple.com.
You and I know and do not believe that life is so dear and peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. If nothing in life is worth dying for, when did this begin? Just in the face of this enemy? Or should Moses have told the children of Israel to live in slavery under the Pharaohs? Should Christ have refused the cross? Should the patriots at Concord Bridge have thrown down their guns and refused to fire the shot heard round the world? The martyrs of history were not fools. And our honored dead, who gave their lives to stop the advance of the Nazis, didn't die in vain. Where then is the road to peace? Well, it's a simple answer after all. You and I have the courage to say to our enemies, there is a price we will not pay. There is a point beyond which they must not advance.
This is Always Right Radio with Bob France on AM 1420, The Answer.
Okay, we move into hour number three now. It's 7 minutes past 11 o'clock. It's been a rough one today. It's been a rough one. There's a lot of rough stuff going on right now. I mean, honestly, between the battle over sending billions and billions of our dollars to a foreign country that we can't trust to fight an enemy that we trust even less, that we have to borrow, by the way, from China to even be able to send them $60 billion, between that battle, what's going on the campuses at Yale and at Columbia and at MIT and most of the elite institutions all over this country, where Jewish kids are no longer safe and are being told to go home by rabbis because it's not safe and nobody's going to protect you. Columbia, for crying out loud, Columbia, all they have to do, Eric Adams said, we can't come onto your campus, it's a private campus, with our police and protect your students unless you give us the green light and ask us to come. They won't ask them. They don't want to protect the Jewish students. Jewish students are being told, go home, get off campus while so you can be safe. I don't know what country, and I don't know what year, and I don't know what decade this is, but that's just some unbelievable stuff. Meanwhile, here at our own schools, on the younger levels, and at the university level, the indoctrination is so deep and so thick, parents are just begging for an alternative. What can we do? Well, the answer is to take control yourself. Alex Newman wrote a great article for Newsweek. American education needs a pro-parent overhaul. It's not new information, but it is a rallying cry, and he's here to talk about it with us. Alex Newman is an award-winning journalist, educator, author, nationally syndicated radio host, the president of Liberty Sentinel Media, and the author of his latest book, Indoctrinating Our Children to Death. which has been endorsed by top leaders in education, the media, the ministry, military, and more. He is also a volunteer executive director of Public School Exit, which is a good thing to be. Alex Newman, good to have you back on our program here in Cleveland. How are you, sir?
It's wonderful to be with you. Thank you very much for having me, Bob. And I'm also working with you through the Citizens for Free Speech. So it's great to be with you. Thank you so much for all that you do, and thank you for having me.
I couldn't fit all that on one business card. I don't know. That's a lot of titles there. But, yes, you are indeed one of our advisors now at CFFS, and I'm so glad to have you there for that as well. So, Alex, we're talking education today, which I guess could probably be folded into free speech because it depends on who you are as to whether or not you get a say in what is going on in our schools. So I suppose it kind of all melds together in some ways. But tell us about this. Tell us about your article. And first, before we start talking about solutions, parent-led solutions, how bad is the problem at the K-12 level right now?
Well, I think it's impossible to overstate how bad the problem is. The children are killing themselves. They're dumber than a box of rocks. They don't know what bathroom to go into. Their brains have been completely scrambled. They hate America. They hate their families. They hate God. And it's really impossible to exaggerate how bad it is. It is so bad, it threatens, as Ronald Reagan's 1983 Commission on National Excellence in Education declared, the problem is so bad. It was so bad back then, it threatens our very future as a nation and as a people. They said if a foreign power had done this to us, we would have viewed it as an act of war. Frankly, I think we should see it as an act of war. Our country is destroyed by the public education system, and our children are being destroyed.
Yeah, that's very well said. It is an act of war, and it's just a different type. But you know what? In some ways, it's very similar to real war. When you look at the violence, and you wrote about this too, violence and crime and crime in high school are exploding. Did you see the most recent video? And sadly, you'll say, which one? Of violence in the schools where a student walks up to a seated teacher and just smacks her in the face. And the teacher doesn't budge, just sits there and after some more trash talk from the student, basically says, you want another one? And the teacher says, no, I don't want another one, but I'm not going to whatever. And she walks up and just blasts her again, curses at her and walks away. This is public school in America 2024. There is no control of the students. The teachers, you know, even the ones who were there to actually educate and not indoctrinate, they are in fear for their lives, as are other good kids, because there is no control whatsoever, Alex.
Yep. It is a dumpster fire, and they're pouring more jet fuel on it right now. And, you don't have to believe us. I mean, look at the government's own data. Less than one-third of the children are proficient in any core subject, right? Parents think they're sending their children to school to learn how to read, write, do math, science, history. Nothing could be further from the truth. They're not learning those things. Back 20 years ago, the last time the U.S. government studied this, 10% of the children in government schools were being sexually assaulted, molested, raped by faculty members. It's probably orders of magnitude higher today. It is just hard to overstate how bad this is. And it's only like 80 to 90% is the best data we have. 80 to 90% of Christian children from Christian homes are leaving the faith and leaving the church after 12 years in government indoctrination centers. So they're now literally being castrated. They're having hysterectomies and double mastectomies as part of what they call gender transitions. They're being injected with hormones. I mean, this is all happening now, folks. This isn't something that's coming in the future. And by the way, if you think it's not happening in your Republican state, think again. It is everywhere, even in the most conservative districts of the most conservative states, because we really don't have local schools anymore. We now have national and increasingly global schools, and they're not even really schools in any sense that a normal person would recognize. I mean, these are indoctrination camps designed to dumb down, sexualize, and indoctrinate children.
Yeah, Alex, it is all of those things. And, you know, when I think about the indoctrination aspect of this and the grooming and the you know, transitioning of kids and telling them, you know, to try to be different identities and these kinds of things, this stuff is being done at the highest levels. They're teaching the teachers how to do this. You know, at the university level, the future educators are being taught how to bring this into the classrooms. Then they join the teachers' unions, and they all seem to be, you know, kind of operating the same way. They want to break kids. kids, at least this is how I see it, they want to break kids away from the comfort that they have with their own parents. They want to break up the family. It's part of classical Marxism, breaking up the family to the point where the kids don't trust the parents, they trust their teachers more. And the more trust they get, the more power they have.
Yep, and this is all being done deliberately and very strategically. Some of the evildoers who have put these programs into place, they've bragged that in 15 minutes they can undo everything parents tried to instill in their children in 15 years. It is a crisis of monumental proportions, and it is an existential crisis. If we don't deal with this, if we continue to sacrifice 80 to 90% of our children to this machine, we're going to lose our liberties, we're going to lose our families, we're going to lose our churches, we're going to lose our communities, we're going to lose our children. And so I do regard this, Bob, as the most important threat, the most important crisis facing our families and our country. And if we don't deal with it, again, we're going to lose everything. So we have to.
We're talking to Alex Newman. He is an award-winning journalist and an author. His latest book is Indoctrinating Our Children to Death. And he wrote a piece for Newsweek about what to do, how parents can take back education of their kids. And by the way, we're talking about the public schools, and you're talking about all the districts. Some people think that the answer is the parochial schools, and they're not. The private schools and parochial schools have embraced, so many of them, I know I have experience with them, embrace the same type of thing that the public schools are doing. I have been pushing people toward charter schools like the Hillsdale Barney Charter Schools. There's a new one opening up here in Northeast Ohio in Copley called the Northeast Ohio Classical Academy. And those are tuition free, because most people who want to take their kids out of the public schools and put them somewhere cannot do it because of tuitions. Those are tuition free. Between homeschooling and classical education schools, I think those are the answers, but sadly not everybody has access to those, right?
Yeah, I would say over the long term, we really need to move away from the idea of government involvement in education. I mean, it was an incredibly bad idea to put the government in charge of education. We never should have done it. It's a recent innovation. Before the government even got involved in education, we had the most literate, the most educated, the most knowledgeable, and the most moral population anywhere on the planet in all of human history. If you compare Americans today with Americans 150 years ago before we had government education, they were geniuses, and we're a bunch of bumbling idiots. And of course, this is by design. So I think long term, we need to move completely away from the government model of education. Government should not be funding, government should not be controlling, government should not be measuring anything having to do with education. It's just not the proper realm for government. And ultimately, we need to go back to the non-system that we had before the public schools, primarily led by parents, with some additional branches, if you will, by the different churches, by the different nonprofit groups, religious organizations. Of course, there were private schools and academies and things like that. But we really need to introduce a free market competition once again. And there's a growing movement for this. One of the guys I cite in my article, Columbia Law Professor Philip Hamburger, to go to the free speech issue, he actually argues that having the government control education is actually an infringement on the First Amendment, because you're basically pressuring and even coercing sometimes parents into substituting their own speech, you know, what they would like to teach their children, what they would like to say to their children, for the speech of the government. And they do this through a series of perverse incentives, like taxing us to death to pay for these government indoctrination centers, and then telling our children what they want to tell our children rather than letting us do it. So I do think homeschooling is the gold standard for those who can do it, for those who don't feel like they can homeschool. And by the way, you can homeschool. Nobody loves your children more than you. Nobody knows your children better than you. Nobody understands what they need better than you. But for those who don't, we need to move toward, like you said, a system of classical schools with classical education. I do believe parents in this country, more than two-thirds of whom identify as Christian, want the Bible restored to its proper place in education. And as long as running this system, that's not going to be possible. It's time to get the government out and put the parents back in the driver's seat.
Yeah, and you know, Alex, you wrote about what you just said, too, that families and churches together used to be responsible for education, and that's what we need to go back to. And you also talk about the call for a free market education. You start talking about the church aspect, though, you get the pushback from secularists who say no, and, you know, they invoke the separation clause, and that, there should be no government impose religion on anybody. And I know it doesn't impose religion, but when you do start talking about the churches being involved in education, you start to get that pushback from other people, right?
Yeah, and you know, to the extent that the government is imposing religion on people, which is what it's doing right now, when they kicked the Bible and prayer out of schools back in 1962, 1963, the justice who wrote the dissent in the case, Justice Potter Stewart, he hit the nail on the head. He said, what we've done here is not neutrality with respect to religion. What we've done here is establish a religion of secularism, or as John Dewey would have recognized it, the founding father of our public school system, the humanist religion. There's no God, I'm God, you're God, we can decide for ourselves what's right and wrong, which if you think about it long enough, you realize that's literally the oldest lie in the book. You go back to Genesis chapter 3. I don't think the government should impose religion on anyone. And education is inextricably intertwined with religion, with discipleship. All Christians should desire a Christian education for their children. And for 2,000 years of Christian history, that's what Christians did. They provided Christian education for their children. It's only the last few generations where we've moved away from that. And we're seeing the fruit of that now. It's a catastrophe. Again, the kids don't know what bathroom to go into. They're killing themselves. They're killing each other. They've got mental health problems like we've never seen. So the solution here is not for the government to give money to churches to educate children. The solution is for parents and churches to cut the government out completely and start doing it themselves. Look, if our goat herding ancestors could afford to educate their children 2,000 years ago, we can certainly do it today, living in the richest society that humanity has ever produced.
Yeah, one would think so. Alex Newman is our guest, the author of Indoctrinating Our Children to Death, and the president of Liberty Sentinel Media. You know, when I say, and you said that, you know, sometimes parents can't homeschool, and you said, well, you can. I mean, in this economy, everybody is a two-parent household. First of all, how many households are two-parent in the first place, much less two working parent households? Point being, if you have one parent and they've got a job, you can't stay home and homeschool your kid. If you got two parents and both of them have jobs, same story. There's a time aspect that's involved, as well as the ability. You know, I wasn't a particularly good math student. I have an English degree, but boy, put an algebra problem in front of me and I'm sunk. I'm not able to help my kid with his algebra homework, much less teach him it from scratch. So what message do you have for parents when you say take over control of your kid's education if they themselves don't have the ability to do that?
Yeah, I think they need to start thinking outside the box, right? Just like parents understand that it's their responsibility to feed, clothe, house, discipline their children, it also needs to be understood that educating their children is also their responsibility. And there are many ways to do it. We know multiple single moms who've been able to homeschool their children. Every community of any size across this country now has multiple homeschool co-ops that will help you. As I mentioned, I'm the volunteer executive director for Public School Exit. We just had a fundraiser at Mar-a-Lago a couple weeks ago. We're now providing scholarships for single moms and very low-income people. But a lot depends on priorities. A lot of parents will tell us, oh, we can't afford it. And then they go out to the parking lot and they get into their 2023 BMW to drive to their 4,000-square-foot home with 8 giant color TVs. And so it's about, you know, where are your priorities? If your priority is the well-being of your children, you're going to drive an older car. You're going to live in a smaller house. You're going to take less vacations. You're going to purchase less fancy clothes. Whatever it takes, I would live in a cardboard box before I would send my children to these indoctrination centers. So I tell parents, the government school building is on fire, and your children are trapped inside. When you start thinking of it in those terms, you're not thinking, how are we going to organize this? What are we going to do with the Johnny, having him home for? No. You get the child out of the burning building, and then you figure those things out. There are ways to do it. One obvious example, and not to just sound self-promotional here, but I serve on the board of the Freedom Project Academy, an online K-12 Christian school. I'm a volunteer. Again, I don't draw any salaries, so I don't get any benefit from this. But we have an online K-12 program. Costs about $1,500 a year. Any parent with reason can afford it, and if they can't, we've got a scholarship program. And you'll get a full K-12 education, all the subjects, light years ahead of what the government schools are doing, with real phonics, real history, real science. So there are tons of options like this. You know, the free market is really, really good at producing stuff, and we just have to break free from the mold. Like I say in the Newsweek, you know, when we look at the collective farms of the Soviet Union, we look back and we're kind of like, oh my goodness, how could they have been so stupid? What made them think that the government would be good at farming? Right? And so the solution to collective farming was, of course, not to reform the collective farms or to think about them slightly different. It was to get rid of them and to restore private property rights and proper incentives. Nobody's got a bigger vested interest in your child's education and your child's well-being than you do. And so we've just got to think differently about this. We've just got to get our priorities in order. We need to recognize our children should be our number one priority. And if that means sacrificing a little bit, if that means not buying the boat or not going on two Disney and ski vacations every year, whatever sacrifice it takes, we need to make that. And frankly, when we shut down the government schools, that's going to be $5,000 to $10,000 extra dollars per family on average that they're not paying for this $1 trillion a year monstrosity masquerading as an education system. So it can work. It does work. My wife and I do it. I make very little money. She stays home with the kids. Anybody can do it if they put their minds to it. And if they can't, we'll come alongside them and help, even providing grants.
There's so many different places I could go to follow up on that. But to your analogy of the buildings being on fire, get your kids out first, then start putting out the fire. Some are saying we can put out the fire by taking over the school boards. There's multiple movements across the country, grassroots, to try to replace the indoctrinators on the boards with parents. Like you said, it's a parent takeover. Can it be saved if enough people do that and enough, you know, if boards are changed? Can the public school system be saved, or is it too late?
To me, that's like asking, can we save the collective farms? If we just get better managers, if we just put in better policies, can we save the collective farms? Why would you want to? I mean, why would you want to fix socialism? It's like asking, you know, how would you like to reform your cancer? If we get a better school board, can we make your cancer better? I don't want to make my cancer better. I want to get rid of the cancer. So, you know, I really appreciate the people that are sticking their neck out and running for school board, and I value them. I love them. A lot of them are my good friends. I know school board members, state school board members all across this country. But the reality is, this is a system that cannot be saved and should not be saved. It's built on a faulty foundation. It's built on faulty premises. It was designed and created, as I expose in my new book, Indoctrinating Our Children to Death. I show the history. The people who built this system, every last one of the important ones, had as a goal turning your children away from God, away from their family, and away from their country. So there should be no desire to save this system. To the extent that you can get on the school board and sound the alarm about the fact that children are burning to death inside, great. To the extent that you can get on the school board and defund this system, great. But the reality is, we shouldn't even be trying to save this system, because it's a disaster. We need to get away from this system and rebuild a new one in its place. And, you know, the only reason I see that's worthwhile getting onto the school board is to move the ball further down the field with that ultimate objective in mind.
Last thing, Alex, about this, and we really appreciate it. This is very, very powerful and insightful stuff. And I hate saying what I'm about to say, but there are a lot of really, really awful parents in this country. And I'm sorry, I really am, but it's the reality of it. There are some parents who don't give a rip. The public school works because the public school takes them for 7 hours a day. And I have to put next to no effort into it whatsoever. I drop them off, or I get them on the bus, and they go in, and they learn what they learn, and they come out, and they get their diploma, and they go get a job and get out of my hair. I'm happy with that. And I hate to say that there are people like that, but there are far more of those than there are people like you and I who are discussing this. My listeners, people who follow you, read your books and so forth. Yeah, these are parents you can reach out to and say, this is what has to be done, this is what should be done. But to collapse the entire public school system would be to bring all those other absentee parents on board, the ones who don't care. They don't care as long as somebody educates them and I don't have to worry about it. That's the path of least resistance for them. So can anything like this happen without a full buy-in by a significant majority of the parents, many of whom have nothing to do with it?
Yeah, you make a good point. And the reality is, the reason we have so many parents like that is because they are also victims of the government school. They were dumbed down, indoctrinated, and turned against God, their family, and their country during maybe 15 years in government school. So we have to stop the bleeding. You know, to the extent that, and I would say as a general rule, virtually every parent loves their child more than anybody else on the planet. Psychopaths and things like this. But virtually every parent loves their child more than anybody in the world does. And I do believe if we're ever going to recover and restore civilization, it's going to have to run through parents. They're going to have to get a grip. They're going to have to do the right thing. It'll take time. This is a multi-generational task, but we have to do it.
Absolutely right. Alex Newman is our guest. Alex, make sure to pick up Alex's book. It's Indoctrinating Our Children to Death. Make sure you look him up at the Liberty Sentinel Media as well. And I just Googled it up while we were talking. I'm sorry, I don't use Google. I searched it up. The Freedom Project Academy as well, for those who might be interested in the online schooling option that Alex mentioned. Alex, thank you for what you do and for coming on. I appreciate you very much, and I hope to talk to you again soon.
Thank you for having me, Bob. Appreciate it.
Thank you. FreedomProjectAcademy.com, by the way, is the website. No, it's not. I beg your pardon. I searched Freedom Project Academy. It came up. FPEUSA.org. FPEUSA.org. That is the Freedom Project Academy website if you're interested in checking that out. Back after this on Always
The Answer.
Oh, my goodness gracious. 216-901-0945, 888-281-1110. Either one of those numbers will get you to me. We've got time for a few more phone calls here before the end of the broadcast. It's been a very, very interesting conversation today. A lot of really, really bad stuff happened over the weekend. Some of them politically, some of them organically on college. I shouldn't even say organically. That's not accurate because those are planned. Those are planned. They are organized. These anti-Semitic groups that are going around and taking over college campuses. They're not all students. Many of them are. But they're bussing in some of the paid protesters as well to scream how much they support Hamas and how much they hate Jews. It's a very, very dangerous thing. And it is not organic. It is absolutely very well organized. But it's there, and it's dangerous. And so we've had a lot of that stuff that we've had to talk about this morning. Whatever you want to get into is fine by me in the last segment here. 216-901-0945. Edward in Parma is next. Edward, good morning. Go right ahead. Hello, Edward. Can you hear me on line two? Is line two
on? I'm Edward in Solon.
Gotcha, Edward. Go ahead, sir.
I'm in Solon. Continuing on the education, I'm not an expert, but I am a baby boomer and lived through a lot of education. I went to Shaker Heights High School. Mm-hmm. What changed education, I think our generation changed it, and that is Vietnam. I think when SDSers, who were the head of Students for Democratic Society in the Vietnam War, start coming to an end, they couldn't get a job, and they went into education. And in our education of the baby boomers, we had our parents, which came from a generation of fighting World War II. Now, you know, they're going to be a little bit more conservative. And as time went on, this kind of type of thinking of liberal education really filtered into our education system. Now, that's just how I see it.
And there's no question about it. It definitely has. And I think, you know, I mean, thank God, you know, that generation was there, the greatest generation that was able to fight World War II. And you're right, by their nature, they would be more conservative. They would be more patriotic. They would be more thankful for what we have. And they would be more interested in continuing, you know, the growth of the Republic. But now, can you imagine if this generation, if the youngest generation right now, the Gen Zers, were forced to defend this country against the rest of the world, we would be done. We would either be speaking in a similar situation, either Japanese or German right now, on all parts of the country and likely from behind bars. There's just no question about it. And I agree with you from the standpoint of, you know, education, and again, just personal pride in country and in family. We have let these younger generations down when we allowed them as the greatest generation got older, and as that feeling started to subside and the boomers aged up, and, you know, my generation of Gen Z, you know, so many of us just don't matter anymore to, you know, the younger generation, and we have abandoned them, and we have taken God out. We have taken, you know, all sense of national civic duty and moral obligations, family values, all these things out of our culture. No wonder it's on the verge of collapse.
We had to run home and see if we were drafted. Can you imagine today if we had the draft of both men and women at 18 that you had to serve and take a physical and pass it and go through all that?
You know what I loved about you guys and the generation before, you know, is that they didn't even have to be drafted. I mean, obviously many of them were, but especially when they saw what was going on and when the United States was hit, I mean, how many of them just flocked to the recruitment centers, you know, to enlist.
Was more during the Reagan administration, because believe me, we went. You know, I went to Kent State, and what happened there, and believe me, at Kent State and other universities that were exploding, it was such a difference between the two generations. They didn't even talk to one another. So, who knows what would have happened if there was no Vietnam, you know.
That's a great point.
So there you go.
Yeah, but like you said, coming home to find out if you were drafted, I can't imagine that. But it was, you know, it was obviously a very different time, and we're in a very, very different place right now. That generation that fought World War II, it was different than the generation that fought Vietnam and Korea, and they're different than certainly the military
we
that we have today.
We might have dropped the ball though. The our generation, the baby boomers, might have dropped the ball with our kids, and then their kids, of course, having their values.
Domino effect. Yeah. Very much a domino effect. It does, you know. And I hate to pin that on anybody and saying you started the ball rolling and ruined this whole thing. But the reality is, look, every generation is responsible for itself. And yes, we hand down certain things to them. And you know what? The greatest generation, the silent generation, they were no different. They just found leaders, and leaders found a way to spark in them what needed to be done in order to protect and preserve and grow this country and this, you know, the liberty that we have right now. So it can happen again, but it just, you know, somebody has to stop the cycle.
I as I go around and see people and look at people on TV, I see a different conservative coming back, just like they happened after the Reagan years, more USA Today type of person, you know, insuring. And I think that'll come back. Maybe we have to hit the lowest point before it does, but I see it coming back.
Well, that's a sad thing. Sometimes that's that old rock bottom analogy, right? You know, you have to hit rock bottom before you can start coming back up. And maybe you're right. Maybe that's what has to happen. And sadly, I feel like we're getting close to it. Hey, Edward and Solon, thank you, my friend. It was good to talk to you. Appreciate you. All right, let's go to Charlie in Brownholm. Hey, Charlie, go ahead.
Hey, Bob. Very interesting show. I'm enjoying it very much.
Thank you.
Hey, we're talking about the Ukraine-Russia war. No one's talking about the end game. Is the end to try to defeat Russia? Because what, have they forgotten that we have a doctrine called the Mutual Assured Destruction Doctrine? We're fighting a war, a proxy war, with a nuclear power that can't lose. If it's back is pushed up, they'll blow up the world. And these people are ridiculous. I the money's a big thing, but I don't care. This is about, you know, a war with Russia and the end of the world. We've got to stop this and just make it a demilitarized zone, you know, just stop at Crimea, and that's it. They get that, and that's it. We've got to stop this before. I mean, Russia has proven it can't fight a ground war against Finland or Sweden. It can't do it. They can't beat Ukraine. They're not.
Yeah, that's why this garbage that we're hearing from some on the war hawks are saying, well, they're going to go into Poland if they get through Ukraine. No, they're not. They're having a hard enough time with Ukraine. They don't have the ability to go through, and they don't want, like you said, mutually assured destruction. I talked about this earlier. They know full well if they get into a NATO country, then we get involved. And if we get involved, then China's getting involved. And yes, it will be a world war. And everyone knows they don't want. There's and thank you for the call, my friend. I appreciate you, Charlie. There was a song in the 1980s. It was on Sting is one of my favorite singers from the 80s. I loved the Police and I loved his solo stuff. There was a song called Russians.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never before seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to salemnow.com. Salemnow.com.